Legacy of War, written by Wilbur Smith and David Churchill, and read by Sean Barrett.
Chapter 1. Kenya, June 1951. In the flickering smoky light cast by torches and burning brushwood, Kungu Kabaya looked past the slaughtered goat lying in the middle of the abandoned missionary chapel towards the men, women and children, watching in fearful expectancy. There were around 60 of them, members of the Kikuyu tribe and squatters, as the white farmers called their black labourers. For no matter how hard a squatter worked, no matter how long he or his father or even grandfather had lived on the farm, no matter how skillfully he had built the hut in which he and his family lived, he only stayed on the farm with the farmer's blessing and could be expelled at any moment with no right of appeal. Kabaya cast his eye towards a separate group of around 20 squatters, men and women alike, who had been selected to take part in tonight's ceremony, and he nodded to the one at the head of the line. He was thin and gangly, no more than 18 years old. With a young man's reckless bravado, he had volunteered to be the first to take the oath. But as the gravity of his decision weighed upon him, his courage was giving way to anxiety and trepidation. Kabaya approached him and put a fatherly arm upon his shoulder. "There's nothing to fear," he said, speaking quietly, so that only the youngster could hear him. "You can do this. Show them all that you're a man." The five men Kabaya had brought with him to the ceremony glanced at one another and gave nods or smiles of recognition as they watched the young man straighten his back and hold his head up high, his confidence restored. They had all served with Kabaya in the King's African Rifles, a British colonial regiment, during World War II, campaigning in Ethiopia against Mussolini's Italian armies, and then in Burma against the Japanese. They had watched as he had been promoted from private to company sergeant major within 5 years. And for each of them there had been times when Kabaya had found the words to keep them going in times of hardship or given them courage when the fighting was most fierce. When they came home to East Africa to discover that their military service had earned them neither human rights nor decent jobs, Kabaya and his men had turned to crime. Their gang was one of many that emerged in the teeming shanty towns that had sprung up around the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, but it swiftly became the most powerful. The gangsters had become rebels, and still they followed Kabaya. Whether a soldier, a criminal, or a terrorist, their boss had a genius for leadership. Kabaya stepped back to leave the young man alone in the middle of the floor. As he did, his second-in-command, Wilson Gitiri, sat beside the goat, placing the wickedly sharp, long-bladed panga knife, with which he, like all of Kabaya's men, was armed, on the floor by his right hand. Kabaya was a tall, handsome, charismatic man. He was highly intelligent, confident in his ability to win people over by reason and charm, as well as fear. Wilson Gitiri was malevolence personified. He was shorter in stature than his commander, but he was as barrel-chested as a bull. His face was crisscrossed with thick welts of scar tissue. His eyes were permanently narrowed, forever searching for possible threat. His hair was plaited into tight braids that were gathered in a ridge that ran from the back to the front of his scalp, like a soldier's forage cap. His presence in the chapel was an act of intimidation. An earthenware jug, a battered tin cup, and a length of rope had been placed by the head of the goat. Gitiri poured a small measure of thick, dark, viscous liquid from the jug into the cup before replacing both vessels in their original position. Minutes earlier, Gitiri had removed one of the goat's legs with a single blow from his panga. He had skinned the severed limb, cut the muscles away from the bone, and diced the uncooked flesh into 20 cubes, which he piled in a wooden serving bowl. This, too, sat on the floor beside the animal's body. Kabaya glanced at Gitiri to ensure he was prepared. Gitiri nodded. Kabaya said, "Repeat these words after me. I speak the truth and vow before God and before this movement of unity